And we are live, folks, and a couple announcements out of the gate today. Number one, if you follow me on Instagram, you might be seeing this. StreamYard and Instagram finally got their shit together, and I was able to successfully set up a stream to Instagram without some third-party bullshit that made it a lot more work. And I've always said if there's a destination I can stream to that people follow me on, that I can just tick a button, or in this case, drop in a stream key one time, and okay, we'll do it. So I checked yesterday, and that was added as a destination option without using a third-party software. And I'm like, yeah, okay, so we're there now. It hasn't been added to TSPC Live yet. But do remember, tspclive.com is where you can find all the upcoming streams, or basically the next upcoming stream, unless I haven't updated it yet. If it has the last one, then I didn't get there yet. Another announcement, I don't know exactly when, it probably won't be this week, but pretty soon, the background behind me and the videos anyway will change. It will not be great. It will be my wife's office. If I sound a little echoey today, it's because there's a lot less stuff in my office. I've begun moving things out. The carpet's coming out, new flooring's going, and paint's happening. Big old treatment to the background. And with some of the changes I've made, which is big one, is fish tanks out. I'll have room now for a tripod to sit back there, and you'll have a broader view of what's behind me. And it won't just be a flag. I'll leave it at that for today. But it should be a big upgrade to the studio, but sometimes growth requires a step backwards. So the show won't slow down. The content won't be different, but the background will. So just so you know that. Anyway, that actually will hit today, I'm sure, a couple times in some of the points I have for you today, that sometimes to move forward, we have to take a step back first. Because what we're going to be talking about today is 10 points that I find to be incredibly important to life. And I'm not going to say, you know, one of the problems I have when I talk about school, especially college, but I really think that these things, while they are collegiate level, if they're taken there, should be taught in grade school. I did the math one time, and it's something 11,000 hours children spend in required education that we call K-12. 11,000 hours. And the amount of things that are actually important to life that they don't learn versus the amount of shit that they're forced to learn that will not impact their lives is dramatic. And I think these 10 things belong in K-12, and they belong at university level and more advanced learning. Think of it this way. There's a saying in a lot of the martial arts, you know, like karate, taekwondo, et cetera, where they have progression of belts, and part of your progression of belts is katas, like forms, you know. And they say there are no black belt forms. There's only white belt forms done at a black belt level. So these concepts can be taught to a sixth grader, a 12th grader, or a person seeking a master's degree, like an MBA or something like that. And they will apply equally valuable, but they'll also do things at a different level and take them to a different level as they have more background and ability to extrapolate from them. I'll also remind you guys that if you have any questions, and it is a crapshoot because I am a one-eyed Jack for real in real life. I can't see out of my left eye. Technically, I have vision, but I'm legally blind in it. So when I'm by myself in the studio, I'm highly likely to miss your questions and statements that you want comments on, unless you follow the rule, which is put the word question as the first word in all caps and then ask me your question. And I'll try to come back to it. If you do a super chat, I'll definitely come back to it because it'll automatically star. If you have a comment, you can put comment and all. But the first word, question, comment, point, something, all caps, and I'll be more likely, not guaranteed, but more likely to see it and come back to you later. I'll leave that scroll along the bottom there for a bit. Before we get into this topic, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Start9 Private Servers. You can take back your technological sovereignty with Start9. You can run your own messaging apps. Basically, you're running your own server. You can store your data. You can access it from anywhere in the world across Tor. When you're on your own network at home, it still has a great deal of value. You go to a .local address so that you can do all of the things that are able to be done with Start9, including things like, again, private messaging, running a Bitcoin node, running BT Pay Server to take your own payments, running a Lightning node, and a ton of other cool things that you can do with a Start9 server. It's not hard to do. It's dramatically easy. It's one of those things like, Some of it actually seems a little bit hard, but like Jesse just did a great presentation on this. Like it'll say like, now configure it after you install it. And literally configuring it is click a button that says configure because it'll go to its defaults. If you want to get more advanced and change it, just don't think that you can't do this. When you hear me talk about Start 9, if you want to have like your own level of true control over your technology, Start 9 is a place to go. Once you get your server, you know, just pick something that sounds interesting. It doesn't necessarily have to go straight to a Bitcoin Lightning node, which is pretty complicated. Pick something that seems interesting out of all of the things that are available. Install it. Learn how to configure and use it. When you're done with that one, do another one. You know, do one every 2 weeks even. You'll be amazed at what you will learn about technology as a whole and about what Start 9 can do for you. They also do a discount for MSP members that will more than pay for your membership. Especially on their better servers. They'll pay for like 3 years of membership. Next up today is JM Bullion. As much as I am a freaking huge bull on Bitcoin, I have never been the, you know, all in on one thing person. I never will be. I believe in diversification. I believe different tools and different assets have different purposes in different places and different situations. Gold and silver are great for transacting face to face. They're great as an anonymous form of wealth. You can transfer them to another party. Nobody need know. If you have, you know, silver or gold on hand in smaller amounts, you can even go to pawn shops and get cash for them without a 1099 if you stay under a certain value. There's also with American Eagles a certain amount that you can sell every year, no matter how much money you make on them, and not pay taxes on them. They have a tremendous amount of flexibility. And I've stacked silver and gold for many, many years. I always will. And when I'm going to stack more, I go to JM Bullion. Not because they pay me a sponsorship fee. No, because they're the best deal out there. You're going to pay less for the same stuff. It's going to ship free. And if there's ever a problem, I'm going to be able to make an email to the owner of the company who will make sure it gets taken care of. Additionally, you know, it's the same stuff as anywhere else again, and it costs less. That's just like, why wouldn't you do that? Plus they give an MSB discount on larger purchases. No one gets a discount on silver and gold, but you guys do through the MSB and JM Bullion. With that, let's go ahead and move on and get into this topic today. I want to talk about just a little bit at first where this topic came from. And as you can hear, my voice is still a little crackly, but trust me, it's just a voice thing. I'm souped up right now. And I'll tell you maybe a week or two from now, as I keep doing what I'm doing, why. I kind of hinted at it yesterday, but I tried it today, this morning, and it was pretty badass. But anyway, whenever I do rewinds, occasionally I'll say, you know what, I'm going to pick one of them, and while I'm getting ready for whatever has me on doing rewinds in the first place, I'm going to listen to it. And I listened to one of the rewinds I left behind you. There was one point I made in it that ended up being my first point today, and that is there is no there or here anymore, and we'll get to that in a second. But when I heard that, I was like, you know, that is one of those things we should teach kids in school. That is one thing we should teach young adults and people developing their careers in life. There is no there and there is no here anymore. And I started thinking about a lot of different things. And as I did that, I was like, you know what? This would be pretty easy to develop a list of these things that are not, you know, Jack's laws of life stuff. This is, you know, off the reservation from that, just individual other things. And, okay. That's what I was looking for. I want to give credit for this one. Okay. When we get to it, I had one I was missing and my screen just went black over here for a second, but, Robert Frost was the name I was looking for. Anyway, these were just things that I've always felt that we should teach people and expound upon as we go through life that pay dividends over and over and over again. They're also quite motivational, and I want you fired up by the end of today's show. And so let's lead off with the first one, and that is there is no there or here anymore. And this was the episode I left you guys on the poverty mindset. And it was in 2018 I did that episode, and I had just come back from Self-Reliance Festival with Nicole and John up there in Tennessee. And Tim Toolman Cook did a really great presentation that invoked poverty mindset, which I don't feel like I'm pulling from him because he pulled from me first, because I've taught you guys about that concept for a very long time. And he told this incredibly moving story, and he described this gentleman that had left his small, poor-ass hometown and gone out and achieved great things, And eventually he came back to this little town, and being a very giving and now very successful man, was talking to people in his own former hometown, the place he literally grew up. And this guy grew up dirt, poor, squalor, shack level living in the South as a black man, right? And as he's doing this, people kept telling him, but you don't know what it's like here. In other words, I can't achieve what you did because I live here. Kind of just ignoring the fact that this gentleman was from this exact place. And the gentleman, if you listened last weekend, you know, or you remember the original episode, or you know the story, was Morgan Freeman, one of arguably the most successful actors in Hollywood, iconic movies, things like Shawshank Redemption, one of the most iconic voices for narration there is. He's from the place, and they're saying, you don't understand, we're from here. You don't know what it's like here. And what I said in that episode, and what was the impetus for this entire episode today, was there is no here anymore. There is no there anymore. I grew up in a very poor place in the coal region, central Pennsylvania, kind of central mid-eastern Pennsylvania, I guess is the way to put it, a few hours from Philadelphia, about an hour north of Reading, hour 15 west of Allentown. If you know any of those places, that kind of gives you an idea where Pottsville is. And Kitmer too says, I met Morgan Freeman a couple of times. He was a dick. Maybe you were a dick to him. I don't know. Like, I met Tommy Lee Jones twice. And one time he was a dick and the other time he was a nice guy. Everybody has bad days. Anyway, back to my point. I grew up in this kind of poor place in the coal region. And when I think about the place now, I don't really want to live there. But if you dropped me there and said, good luck, build something, I could build something. And I could actually build really, really fast because I could take advantage of the fact that, like, cost of living is extremely low there. Nobody's really making a big impact on anything. There's a large number of people that basically are sponging off welfare, have drug problems and all that. But there's also a lot of people who want opportunities. So if I need employees, it's a good recruiting ground. But even if I just want to continue doing something like I'm doing now, even if I had to start over and do some sort of a content-based or software as a service business, something I can deliver electronically, or if I was actually manufacturing, even if I was doing it with an automated type of manufacturing, which there's lots of cheap real estate, both commercial and public, right? So, like, you know, retail, real estate, like for residential, or commercial, there's very cheap ways into that. It wouldn't matter that I'm there. There is no there anymore. There's only two things you need to ask about a location to know if it's a viable place to run a business today. Does the mail go to and from there? And do they have internet access? If you have those two things, there is absolutely nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, that you could want to do that you can't do because you're not, it's not like you're, if you're making some sort of high-end manufactured item, made in America, super high-end thing that costs money, you're selling it to luxury. It's not like you can't send it to people in LA or San Francisco or, you know, Dallas, Texas or Boston. Like there's a service for that. And all it is a shipping charge. And you can reach your entire market from anywhere because we have the internet today, and most people make most of their purchasing decisions, at least in part, due to something to do with the internet. Even the guy that goes to the local tire shop to get his tires changed, if he doesn't know a place to go, probably found it with the internet. So there's no there or here anymore. And this takes away one of the biggest excuses that people make in life. The reason I can't succeed is I'm stuck in this place. The reason you can't succeed is you are stuck in a place. That place is in your head. It's not geographic. Geographic location doesn't mean anything anymore as to success broadly in general. Now, if you want to start a charter fishing operation, where I grew up is probably a bad place to do it. Now, there's probably a lot of business in the fishing world that you could do there. But if you want to put people on boats, like, I'm not saying geography doesn't matter at all. I'm saying there's an opportunity for success regardless of geography, no matter where you are. If you put me on the South Pole of the moon and I had a good internet connection back to Earth, I could run my business from the freaking moon, assuming they had built that base they keep talking about building, and I could actually survive there, and then let me be there. Like, it doesn't matter where I live. Where I live has a lot to do with my personal happiness, but nothing to do with my business success. Now, again, that doesn't mean, and you shouldn't take that to the extreme, not because, oh, I want to prove Jack wrong. That's not what I mean. What I mean is you shouldn't take that to the extreme, because there may be unique opportunities where you are. But as soon as you get out of the idea of there's no there or here anymore, like, I could do that if I was there, but I can't do that here. As soon as you let go of that, you might actually figure out there's some unique opportunities right where you are. And you might see somebody doing something else somewhere and be like, yeah, that would never work here. But what like it would work there? What opportunities can you leverage from where you are? There's really no place you cannot crush it in something anymore. We should be teaching people that. Because how many people leave really solid families and really solid hometowns to go to the big city because that's where all the opportunity is? Well, if you're looking for a job in aerospace, there's probably only a few, and you're like, you're going to be somebody's going to work on site, not remote. There is a limitation there, right? If you're going to start a business, it can be anywhere. Now, sometimes you still may need to leave home. If you are surrounded by that poverty mindset, you might have to leave home. But it doesn't mean that once you build up your abilities and your mindset, you can't go back. The reason you can't stay there sometimes is the crab in the box. Like, I was surrounded by broke ass schoolmates, and literally, I have to say that almost everybody that I graduated high school with that made something out of their life left. Even the ones that are there now, they left, but they came back. I can tell you there are a few, though, that built it right there. When I was in school, when I was a junior, there was a kid named Pete Russo. And this kid worked, I think that was his name. But I do know that the story's accurate. If I got the wrong guy, it's been freaking 40 years almost, right? It'll be 40 years in 2030, I guess. So it's been 35 years. So I could have the individual wrong. But I pay enough attention on what my, you know, classmates are doing in a Facebook group that they do their reunions through. I do remember this in junior high. He had a pretty nice Mustang. It was, you know, 5 or 6 years old, and everybody did the whole daddy bought you a car thing. And Pete was like, no, I've been working at a pizza joint since they would hire me. And I saved up my money and I bought a fucking car. So go screw, you know? And you would think, okay, well, pizza joint in Pottsville, what could that lead to? He owns like 3 Domino's franchises right now, right in the Schuylkill County area. He's worth a couple million bucks. So even if you don't leverage these new tools, there's always opportunity everywhere. There is no such thing as, but you don't know what it's like here, especially when that's told to the person that did it. By the way, the gentleman that said Morgan Freeman was a dick, he said that he met him when he was filming Shawshank. I would expect actors to be dicks in those situations because they got everybody pulling at them. If you've never been to a place where everybody's pulling at you, you can't really understand where you're just like, I've had a fucking enough. Right? I've gotten very little inklings of it compared to a guy like that. And there's points where you're like, I'm done. I literally had somebody one time asking me, can I ask you a question, Jack? At a permaculture conference, I'd gone to the restroom. I'm standing at a urinal with my thing in my hand. And I'm like, not while I pee. So you didn't do that, but you don't know who might have done that before. Give people like that a little bit of grace. Anyway, the next one is self-education is the only kind of education there is. Now, why would a teacher tell you that? The reality is a teacher should tell you that. And the source of that quote is Robert Frost. I've heard it attributed to others, but the little quick research window I just opened up over there narrowed it down to the first recorded instance of it was Robert Frost. I say that only to give credit when I use somebody else's words, but it doesn't really matter which famous person said it. It's the truth. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's a weird thing, okay? When we were getting ready to start homeschooling our grandchildren, we were nervous. I mean, we were advocates, but we had never done it. And then we've got like a kid just starting kindergarten. Like, my granddaughter, when COVID hit, was not even in school yet. Like, she was starting the next year. And we've got a kid that's like in third grade, you know, and finishing up third grade. So we did the work that they handed out and we were fine with that. But we're like, taking the whole thing on, I'm not sure. Well, Mike and Sue LaPreece, who are huge homeschoolers and advocates thereof, and have like every time they graduate enough kids to adulthood, they literally go and adopt more and keep doing it forever. I think these got to be parents until the day that they die, just because they're that kind of people. But we talked to them about different curriculums and things like that. And my wife said to her, well, my biggest thing is, will I be able to help them learn? And Sue said the exact right thing at the exact right moment. And what she said was, no child can ever be forced to learn a thing that they do not wish to learn. And no child can ever be prevented from learning a thing once they choose to learn it. And your job as a teacher is to convince them that the things they need to learn are worth learning, and then everything will take care of itself, to motivate them. That is what Frost meant. Like, even when you go to college, right, it is still self-education. You choose what you actually learn. Now, what you memorize and what you learn are different. How many people got A's in school? 1 year later, let alone this point in life, if I put the test you got an A on in front of you, you couldn't pass it. Or you would do very poorly on it. You get a D or like a low C. Many. Because they never cared. They never cared. Like, the teacher did not do a good enough job of convincing them that the knowledge was worthy of long-term memory, that there was something in it for them. And the reality is, in schools, because a lot of it there isn't. A lot of it there isn't. There's no case that you can make to the average person that advanced freaking calculus is necessary in their life. None. And there's calculus nerds that don't use it in work that will still try to make the case. And yeah, we heard you, nerd. Go do it. And that person's going to learn calculus anyway. But remember your teacher telling you shit like, you'll use this one day. Well, I still haven't. I'm an incredibly successful person. I've built multiple businesses successfully. I've sold multiple businesses. I spent the last 17 years of my life mainly just podcasting and making a fantastic living. That puts me in a pretty rare group of people that can actually do that, especially with like a lot of these guys that are big time podcasters today, right? They had their start in mainstream media. They had a following before they started a podcast. They didn't start with nothing. So clearly I'm a capable, smart person. I'm not lacking in education on anything that matters to me. I cannot tell you the last time I used calculus. Well, actually, I can. It was probably in 12th grade. I use algebra all the time. Basic algebra, sure. Right? But even a lot of people won't use that. I think it's good to give a basic grounding in these things, but it doesn't mean we need to oversell their viability. But in the end, the important thing to realize is if you're going to learn, a teacher is a guide. That's all they are. A book is a guide. A class is a guide. In the end, we always have to teach ourselves or it's not real. And that's why you can put two students in the same class, two students with the same IQ, two students with the same aptitude, and one will absolutely crush the material and the other one might even get a good grade, but they're the one that if you ask them, you know, 6 weeks, let alone 6 years later, you know, what the answer to the second, third, and fourth question on the test were, and I don't mean the whole test, remember, you ask them the question, they don't know. They don't remember because they never gave a shit. So they didn't learn it. They short-term memorized it so that they could answer the question and move on to the next part of their life. So when you take that approach, you start to realize some really important shit. Like, I'll take a job for what it will teach me. It'll teach you exactly as much as you choose to learn. There will be a learning curve where, like, you'll learn the proper company procedure and what to do and how to keep your boss from yelling at you and how to keep your boss from hearing your name in a bad way from his boss. That's important too. That's a little tip right there for being a good employee, right? To where you get everything laid down and even you work the extra hours and do the extra projects that you're asked to do and you don't complain and they see you as a model employee and they even have you targeted for promotion someday. But if that's all you do, then how are you different than anybody else in there? What if when you're in that situation, every time you got to some point in your job, you realize like, this is all I need of this one silo to do the thing that keeps my boss happy and keeps me employed. but I'm going to make note of that. And when I'm not on company time, or when I have a lull at company time, I'm going to learn more about that thing. What if you took the job you're doing and said to yourself, self, what should be my metrics for production quality and speed? How should I judge my own performance? Because they tell me I'm doing good. That's nice. But if I want to be a manager, if I want to be a higher level manager, if I already am, then I'm going to have to be able to manage people at my level, right? To move above my level, I have to manage my level, right? Okay. So then you should develop your own system of gauging your own performance and then challenge yourself to exceed your current metric. Now you're learning by choice. Now you're self-educating by choice. By the way, I'm just going to point out, when you walk into your review, when you ask for a raise, when you're interviewing for a promotion, and they say, why? Well, I'm glad you asked, Bill. Here's my metrics that I've judged: my speed of return of calls, my follow-up, my close percentage, my accuracy of forecasting, whatever it is you do. And no matter what you do, there are some metrics you can apply to what you do. If you were an MA or an LVN in a medical office, how many patients do you put back a day? How many follow-up calls do you do? How much less do your patients call back in because they didn't understand something before they left? How accurate are your charts? I know that because I never did the job, right? But my wife was an LVN. So like I was trying to explain to her at one point, I said, well, tell me what you do. Well, there's no metrics to tell me what you do. There's your metrics. I don't care what you do. Flip fucking burgers, scrape gum off desks. I don't care what you do. There are metrics that you could apply, and that would be part of learning. But you should be looking for like, what is the next level of the job require? And not, oh, you have to have an MBA. Fuck that. You don't need an MBA. And if your company really stands behind that after you've proven how good you are, go find a company with that next level of the job that does it, that wants to poach you from the one that's not smart enough to understand. Go learn the things, not the credential. Go be an autodidact. That's self-directed learning. But even when you go get the MBA, you'll get the most out of it when you accept the fact that every bit of your learning is self-education. It is the only form of learning. Again, all credit to Robert Frost or whoever else said it, okay? Next up would be this one. I don't have to look up who said it because I read this book many, many years ago and it had a dramatic impact on my life. Less in business and more in life philosophy. And that was the book Richard Bach's book was a bestseller in the early 70s called Illusions. Confessions of a Reluctant Messiah was the subtitle. I won't go into what the book's about today. But there is a point in it that the two main characters are having a conversation. One's kind of like the guru and the other kind of like the student. And in the conversation, it comes out, well, what is the meaning of life? And the meaning of life is to learn and to have fun. And the guru expresses it this way. We humans are the otters of the universe. Think about an otter, playful, but smart and inquisitive. That's our purpose. Learn as much as we can and have fun all along the way. Well, that might be like, well, wait a minute. Do we really want to tell a generation of half-ass achievers that their goal in life is to learn and have fun? Absolutely. Because you know what happens when you have fun learning? You learn more and you do more. What happens when you really learn something? You want to apply it. See, it's amazing to me. You get somebody out of the school system today. And I am talking higher ed now. And they got a bachelor's degree and whatever the fuck it is, you know. And then you say, okay, let's get started. They can't do anything. And how many times have I interviewed someone? Well, what previous job experience do you have? None. This is my first job out of college. Great. What did you do when you're 15, 16, 17 years old? Oh, that wouldn't really be of interest to you. Humor me. And it comes out. The answer is not a fucking thing. They've never worked in a grocery store or packed boxes or like, did you do anything? Like, you know, did you have like a side business cutting, like you're trying to help them here? Maybe even lie to me, right? No, you never cut lawns for your neighbors. I cut the grass in my backyard. I got an allowance. That's not really income. That's your dad making you do something and then making you feel good by giving you money, right? Did you ever actually do any? No, they never did anything. They have no practical freaking experience. And you would think that if I'm actually learning, right? If I'm actually learning in college, I shouldn't be able to help myself, but to be looking for somewhere to apply that knowledge right away. Like, how many of you watch a YouTube video on how to do one fucking thing, and by the weekend you're fucking doing that because you learned? I just saw a guy made a post. I have a Harvard business degree, and I just took a job for $13 an hour because it's all I can find. I'm like, if your fucking business degree was worth a shit, you wouldn't need a job. If you go to Harvard and get a business degree and you don't know how to fund and start a business from the bottom up, what the fuck did you pay them all that money for? So you can put Harvard on your resume. You know who gives a fuck? No one except a Harvard grad looking for a Harvard grad. That it's an alumni thing, and it's powerful. But if you don't happen to have the opportunity in your here, and you're not willing to go to the there, even though I said there's no there in here anymore, to some degree there is. Getting started out of college, that's one of those places. And there's a lot more people that graduate with that Harvard degree than you think there are. So we need to have this inspiring component to life of your goal, your lifelong goal is enjoy yourself while you learn. While you learn. Because if you do those two things, you will apply. I don't know anybody that really learns something every day, okay, and is not successful. I mean it. I don't know anybody that has like as a goal, today I will learn a new thing every day, who doesn't eventually achieve fairly significant success. In fact, I would say two of my keys to life, I'm not going to go in this today, but to becoming a very wealthy and successful person by the time you're in your 50s. One is to end every day with more than you started with, that being money, assets, some monetary value. Like, your net worth should go up a little bit every day, and learn one new thing every day, and do at least one thing you've never done before every week. Those three alone, maybe we'll do a whole podcast on all of those. But those three alone will go a long way toward changing your freaking life for the better in the future, changing future you. Because there is no place to head in the past. There's only forward. We'll get to that one too today. Next, here we are. Goals make the inevitable educational. When you have no goals in life, as long as you're doing the same things, you're going to come across the same opportunities, questions, and problems, and observations, right? Like, two people walk down the same path. I don't mean life path. I mean literally the same path. And they experience seeing the same things. Let's say one person is 20 feet behind the other. They're walking a nature path at like a nature center. It's a 5-mile loop or a 3-mile loop or a 2-mile loop. Doesn't matter what it is. They all see the same things. They see fungus, they see trees, they see animals, they see plants, they see other people, they see features of the landscape, whatever it is. If you have goals, something is probably going to light up in front of you of being, hey, like if you had a goal to learn to identify more plant types, I don't know what that plant is. If you don't have that goal, you walk right past it, unless it's really super unique. And even the person who thought that's kind of neat. But if you don't have a goal to learn more, you probably won't. Yeah, that was cool. Take a picture of it. You forget about it. One day you find your phone. What the hell is this here? Delete. But the person with the goal, that very observation becomes educational. I actually had a person in the audience that wrote into me one time that they actually discovered new plants that were edible when weeding their garden because their goal was to learn about edible plants in their area that grew wild. And if they hadn't had that goal, anything they didn't plant was just a weed to come out. The goal made the education and the inevitable educational. In other words, these things will present themselves in your life. If your goal is to build a business, you're going to see business opportunities. If your goal isn't to build a business, but to bitch about having no money, you're not going to see opportunity. You're going to see problems. And problems are not educational unless you address them. So if your goal is to solve problems, when you see a problem, now I want to solve it. I have to educate myself to solve it. You see, why the fuck don't we teach this in school? Don't worry, I'm not going to get all off the top rope yelling. I don't have the horsepower and the voice for it. Still, I've not recovered enough for that. But why don't we teach that? Well, that would be a problem, wouldn't it? That would be a big problem. Because I want you to bounce this off your brain for a little bit today. The goals of academia are not to create exceptional people. And you can always tell what the goal of any broad organization. So when I say academia, I don't mean Stanford or like the public school your kids go to, that district. I mean the whole of K-12, university through top level, right? And here's how you know it. They never market themselves on their exceptional students. They never say, well, we produced, you know, blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Now, occasionally a higher institution or something might do that. Like if you're the university that produced the Stephen Hawking, you might be pretty proud of that. But in general, how do schools market how great they are? Test scores, which is the median average of everybody taking the same standardized test. So they market themselves on the average because their focus is improving the average slightly. And the school district that has a 5-point higher median average in like the standardized state level test score can justify the fact their school taxes are higher than the one 5 points lower. And parents will believe it. So since they're marketing their average, you know their goal is a good average, not exceptional. Not pushing everybody toward exceptional, which, by the way, would raise the median average. But that's not the mindset that they come through with it, right? So if we start making the concept that goals are what lead to driving education, we start creating exceptional people because it will immediately diversify the education. See, they can't do it. I have to teach everybody history, 1867 to present. In 11th grade at this school, that's your required history course, right? You have to take that course. Like, the person has no interest in history, but is deeply into science, can't pursue that fully. So they can't become exceptional at the thing that they love. And the person that wants to fully pursue history can't either. Even in college, Jack, when they go to college, you get a history degree or a science degree or a medical degree. You think so? Look at how much bullshit you have to take to get your degree. Look at the requirements, the peripheral requirements. Look at all the crap you have to do that has nothing to do with your goals. Now, if you're going to some of the sciences, then that higher math comes back in. You go to engineering, you're damn right it does. How much math does a history major need to know? How much are they required to take? Look it up. You'll be surprised. We can't create exceptional if we don't use goal-oriented learning. And not goal-oriented learning for the state or the school, right, or the class. Goal-oriented learning for the individual. That's what leads to the most dramatic increase in knowledge for the individual, tailor-made to the individual. The next one is, God, do we need this? And, you know, the whole of academia is dramatically leftist and, dare I say, full-on communist at this point, not just colleges. Even I've talked to high school teachers who vote Republican. But when you start talking to them, you realize like that's an ideal that they have. But what they really serve is the leftist mindset of collectivism. And why wouldn't they? Everybody's treated the same. Everybody's paid the same. An 11th grade teacher in the same school district is paid the same as another 11th grade teacher. If they take on certain things, maybe they get a little bonus or whatever. Special ed gets a little bit of a bonus. Some school districts, like if you have a doctorate or a master's, you get paid better than somebody with a bachelor's. But in general, it's paid on what class of grades, like are you high school, middle school, elementary school, and how many years have you been there? It's all the same. And when they fight for raises, they fight collectively. It's socialist. The whole system's socialist. So, of course, they're socialist leaning. And the thing that I'm going to say that they need to be teaching is completely counter to that. And that is, nothing in your life is lacking because of what someone else has. Why do you think we have this hatred of boomers by Gen Z and millennials today? As though the fact that they can't have a house is because they know older boomers who worked all their life that have a nice house that they wish they could have that they can't afford. And they can't see themselves ever affording because they're not willing to do the work and understand the metrics behind getting there. So it's much easier to blame somebody else. Let me tell you something. If all the boomers lost all their money and had none of the houses, you still wouldn't have a house, young man. young lady. You still would. And I don't care if Elon Musk is a trillionaire. It doesn't matter. What you have or do not have has no bearing on what Elon Musk has. And I would say that, like, Elon Musk and his prior partner, Peter Thiel, have created more wealth than any government program ever did in one of their first endeavors. And of course, I'm speaking of PayPal. I want you, a lot of you that are too young, you won't have an appreciation for what it meant to be able to start a website today and apply a payment method to it tomorrow. Like, it's really easy to get like an online credit card merchant account, shit like that now, because there's so much competition because PayPal paved the way for it. But if you go back to like 1999, 2000, right? And you were like, I want to start up a business and I want to sell a thing. I want to charge money for it. Well, how do you do that? You accept Visa, MasterCard, et cetera, right? Well, then if you went and tried to get a merchant account back then, well, what history do you have? Like, all you needed to set up a PayPal account was a fucking bank account. You linked your bank account and you started accepting payments, right? And I still accept payments with PayPal. I have other options, but I still do it because it's where I started, because it was doable. So how many people created businesses that would never have, especially if you go back to like the founding of PayPal up until about 2010, honestly, where it was kind of difficult with somebody with no track record to get an account with somebody like Stripe, which is a great, that's the other merchant account provider. I use is Stripe. I don't believe in one of anything. If somebody cuts me off, I got a place I can move you over to, right? So he made his trillions by serving millions. And that doesn't mean he's a good guy. That doesn't mean I agree. I think he's a fucking whack job on some things. And I think he's a genius on some others. But what I have is not in any way affected by how much Elon Musk has or anybody else has or Peter Thiel has. And in some ways, I can say some of what I have is more because of a service like a PayPal or because of being inspired by things that some of these people have done. And so if we started turning that dynamic around, so when somebody said, well, look how much he has. Well, how'd he get it? What did it take to do so? People all the time. I heard a guy in a short clip the other day debating Charlie Kirk, and Charlie Kirk was making the point like, you don't need a college to get an education. And this kid was an arrogant little fuck. I mean, he really was. He's like, but you don't have any credentials, as though the credential mattered. And then he said, but anybody can start a podcast. Well, Charlie didn't go there, and he had one like about a top 10 podcasts in the world. And Charlie really did build from the ground up, which I always found to be very impressive. But what I would have said to him, but how many podcasts are successful? The answer is very few. About 2% of podcasts last 5 years. 2%. And just, I don't know what percent actually make people a full-time income. That's difficult to skin. I would garner it somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.25% of podcasts make people enough income that it is their business, especially if we were to back out all of the people that are mainstream politicians, mainstream media, former singers, like all these people that have this giant collective following, and then they start a podcast. That's a totally different thing, I say as a man who knows. I was known in the business space and all. The people that knew me didn't know what a fucking podcast was when this started. I had to start from absolutely nothing. So this kid is all about, well, anybody can do it. Well, then why don't you do it? You know, and anybody can do it and be really successful. Then why don't you do it? And you know what that kid would have said? Well, I want more of my blah, 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 blah. I guarantee you, if somebody walked up to this kid and said, hey, kid, here's a fucking check for $10 million. Drop out of school. Go fuck off. Do whatever you want. But get out of here, and I'll just give you this check if you go away and don't ever come back. He would have been so – all you would have saw is asses and elbows on the way to the bank. Because he would have had common sense. Because that would have broke the reality of his bullshit at that point. But, yeah. Nothing in your life lacks because of what somebody else has. And it will be almost impossible, right? Almost impossible to ever achieve success until you let go of that. Until you let go of the bullshit of it must be nice. Because you know my response is, what I used to tell myself, because I have a heart of a teacher. If somebody said to me, well, it must be nice, I used to say, well, let's talk about how you can have it too, right? But I've learned over the years, like there is like what's called pushing a string. You can't push a string. You can pull a string, you can't push it. And that's where you're trying to push a string. And my response to it must be nice now is, yeah, it is. And I go do something else. I'll go put my time with someone who wants help versus somebody who wants to be commiserated with, right? Oh, I'm so sorry it didn't work out for you. Every mentor in my life pushed me. Every mentor in my life made it a little harder on me before it got easier. Every mentor in my life answered every question I had with a complex answer that required more of me than before I asked the question. None of them ever said, here's five steps, go do this. I said, here's five things that impact your life. Go figure out how to make them work. Some version thereof. Next, you are both more and less important to the world than you think you are. I've fired people from very mundane tasks. You'll never get somebody as good as me. Bro, that's not the way to walk out the door. Right? Maybe I just decided that you had maxed out what this job would do, and I wanted to give the opportunity to somebody else, and I was going to give you a great fucking recommendation. Maybe I was even going to make a phone call for you and say, hey, I don't really have a place for this guy to move him up into, but he did a good job. And now you just fucking flushed that shit down the toilet, didn't you? Like, you're not that important. I had you filing shit for me, right? Like, maybe the company's advanced to where we don't need you anymore, and there's no place to move you into, but they think they're really important. I had a farmhand tell me that. Dude, you do the job that my grandson took over. Like, you're not that important. And there's so many people, and as you move up, you think you're more important than you are. There's so many people like, that place would fall apart without me. You know, assuming you're not a one-man show, probably wouldn't. It probably wouldn't. Even if you're very fucking good, unless you know some proprietary shit, like unless you're some advanced freaking PhD in mathematics working at, you know, some sort of advanced AI company, and then you could probably still be replaced. But most of you guys, most people, you guys, shit, we're replaceable. Jack, you're not replaceable. Without you, there wouldn't be a survival podcast. But if I quit, you'll go find another podcast. I'm replaceable like that. People will replace me on a daily basis. I think I've learned all I can from Jack. I'm going to go somewhere else. It's okay. It makes room for new people to come in. I never want my community to be measured in millions. It's too much. You lose the intimacy, the ability to communicate with people. I love the fact that you guys can email me. I don't return every email, but I return, you know, 5 dozen emails a day. If you email me frequently, you've probably heard back more than a couple times. I don't want to ever lose the ability to do that. I think that would be a mistake for me. Maybe not for you, but for somebody else like me, it would be. We all have to figure that out. But the other side of it is, you're also more important than you think you are. There's people that if you died would just be crushed. You have no idea how many times in your life maybe you've touched a person in a moment and forgot about them, and they never have. There's two sides of that sword. Because sometimes you touch them in a way that positively impacted them, and sometimes you touch them in a way that hurt them deep. And maybe they were the person with the self-doubt, they needed that one encouraging word, and at just the right moment, you said something you didn't even think of, and it went inside, and then they went out of your life, and then in the future, when they were doubting themselves, of all the words that came back to them, your words were one of them. So your importance is both a positive and a negative, depending on how you channel it. So you should always be encouraging people to strive harder. Now, this comes from a Gen X guy that will flat out tell you you're a fucking retard. But you know who I tell is a retard? My friends. People that I know. People that I know will either find it funny or find it motivating. Like, Jack, call me a fucking retard, man. I need to do better. I'm not going to do that to somebody I just met. I'm not going to call my employees a fucking retard before I develop a relationship with them. Right? Because that is just bullshit when you do something like that. Because you don't know that person. Be careful how you speak to people, because you don't know if you're hitting that person on the worst day at the worst moment of their life, and you're going to say something that goes inside. And I've met people that when we've talked deeply about what's holding them back, it's 2 or 3 times that happened. That's all it is. And when you say, listen, man, who is this fucking person? When's the last time you talked to him? And sometimes just that little bit of perspective, they're like, fuck him, fuck her, I don't care. My teacher said I'd never be anything. Where's your teacher today? I don't know. Look her up. She's dead. Right? Like, what are you worried? You're 40 fucking years old. You're worried about what your fucking, you know, freshman college professor said about you, and she's fucking dead. What did she ever accomplish? She wrote a textbook. She told that it's a college textbook scam in a circle to teach in her own class. Made no major contributions to society. There's a PhD thesis nobody ever fucking read. Right? And you're carrying that. But you can be that person too. There's a few people in my life I said things to, especially when I was a kid, that I really wish one of them I've actually tried to find. And if I find this person and I tell them I'm sorry, they may not even remember it. But as over my, and I'm hard. I'm an asshole. I'm not just a jerk in the way we make fun of on the air. I'm an asshole. You piss me off, I will hammer you. But just to be mean, not good. But you're also more important in that you can cause that harm, but you can cause so much good. Sometimes that one little thing, that one moment, and I'll tell you something else. Sometimes when you drop it on somebody that you're hard on all the time, it means so much more. And that's part of why I'm hard too. I am a hard person to please as an employer, as an evaluator, as a coach, as a mentor. But then when I turn around and tell that person, you know what? You fucking killed it. They don't see it as flattery. They like, fuck, yes, that's what I've been trying to do. That's what I've been trying to do. So you are more important and less important than you think you are. And both of those things matter in balance. Next, passion is the road to success. Boy, that's the fucking, remember the fucking inspirational posters from like the 80s and 90s? Fucking kittens hanging on shit and stuff, right? You can do it. Hang on. Be there. Boy, that sounds like, yeah, wait, that's only half. You guys know me. I don't make anything that simple, right? Passion is the road to success. But the road may require a 4x4 to navigate. Like when you find something, the reason passion is the road to success, it's not like find your passion, follow your passion, sprinkle it with magic fucking fairy dust, and a jelly bean field will appear, and a unicorn will land, and your guardian angel will come down and give you your wishes. That's not what I mean. The reason passion is the road to success is once you become locked on and passionate about an objective, you will destroy problems. You will achieve beyond problems. You will see problems as nothing but something that's in the fucking way that must be moved aside, blown up, or ignored. You will take on the mantra of it is better to be done than to be fucking perfect. Right? Because if I'm done, I can always improve it. But if I'm fucking around trying to get perfect and I don't get done, somebody's going to get done doing this thing before me and they're going to kick my fucking ass before I ever hit the street. That's why passion is the road to success. So when you hear people like Mark Cuban on like fucking the Shark Tank show going, following your passion is it's just fluff. It's bullshit. You need to find a need and fill a need. Every fucking thing in the world is a need. You should be creative about how you fill it. But what are you passionate about? And if you can't figure out what you're passionate about, be passionate about building a business. Be passionate about growing your career. Be passionate about making money, right? Because you will find a way. And the funny thing is, if you get passionate about, let's say, making more money or growing a career, in your passionate pursuit, you will find an adjacent passion and pursue it. It's amazing. I'll talk to people all the time. Like, I'm thinking about starting a business. Okay, what are you thinking about doing? They'll tell me. I'm like, okay, what kind of experience do you have in that? Turns out they have perfect experience in it. It's the only thing they've ever done in their life. They just want to go do it for themselves instead of their employer. This can be a good play, but it usually isn't. I'd say it's an 80-20 in reverse, right? Like 80% of the time, it's a bad play. 20% is a good play. And if it's like the kind of career path that's typical in, like people that are CPAs, you know, they often work for a firm and then they go out and create their own firm. Okay, that's a different thing. But when people are like, or they're going to look for a new job, and they're going to stay straight in the, like, I'm looking for another company that does the exact same thing this company does. There's no growth in that. And so I asked that person on there, are you really passionate about subject? Insert subject here. Well, I like it. Or do you see incredible opportunity in your passion about the opportunity? Either one works. Like, I know how to do this differently and I can go out on my own and I can do this so much better that I can fucking crush it, and I can build an incredible life, and in 10 years I can sell my fucking business and go fuck off for the rest of my life doing whatever I want. Okay, I'm all in. But usually what you find is that person is just kind of like daydreaming out loud. Like, I don't want to work for anybody anymore. So if I had a job doing what I'm doing now, but I didn't have to answer to anybody, fuck, you have no clue what you're in for. You're gonna need that 4x4 on that road. It's gonna be hard. You're gonna find out all the reasons you think your boss is an asshole, and you think his boss is an asshole, and you think policy's bullshit when you have to do it yourself. You're gonna find out why you thought you were underpaid. You're gonna have to make 150% of your salary before you really start to make more than you're making now. The time freedom, don't get me wrong, it's wonderful. But how much time freedom is there while you're building a new business? None. The eventual time freedom is there if you scale the business properly, if you design the business properly. You have to know what you're designing. So passion is your key to success, whether it's in a job, it's in a career progression, it's in an educational profile, it's in a competitive environment, it's in a business environment, but you're going to need a four-wheel drive. And that's what you need to understand. That's why the passion is such an important component of it. Because if I'm passionate about something and I get to a point where it's hard, I go around it and over it. If I'm not actually passionate, if it was just something that sounded good at the time, then when I run into that road, I quit. Fuck it, I'll go do something else. This is too hard. I find this, like, I know people, for instance, who they love sports. They love sports and they love to go to games. And then, like, say, we'll go to opening game of the Rangers baseball game, you know? And that motherfucker will be up first thing in the morning on the day those tickets go on sale. They're on the advanced list. They're hitting refresh, 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 buy. Like, their life for that day because they're not getting the fucking tickets so they got that fucking game that I don't give a shit about. I'm not putting them down for it. But when I look at that person and I go, bro, if you did that one day a week at your job, like, you just coasted 4 days a week, but you worked that hard every Monday at your job, you'd be running the fucking place in 5 years. But in 5 years, that person's going to be at the same desk and the same job. No ambition because they have no passion. And I would tell you, if you're in a job where you have no passion for your job, no passion for your career progression, start looking elsewhere. Don't quit. Quitting's fucking stupid. Quit means you go to zero and then you end up having to take the next thing you can find because you're going broke. But looking while you have, outside of where you are, a very powerful leverage point. I'm interviewing you for, let's just make it a simple job. I'm interviewing for a job. Top Cone, I'm interviewing Top Cone for a job. And I say, what are you doing now? He tells me his job. And I say, that's not directly related. And we have the conversation. But you don't have to, if he convinces me he's the right man, he's the guy I'm looking for this opportunity, I already know I'm going to pay more. I already know I'm going to pay more. Let's say that Dennis, right? Dennis, who's right below Top Cone in the chat, right? Dennis is the other guy interviewing for the job. Dennis doesn't have a fucking job. If I decide he's the guy I want, I'm probably paying him less. Unless he's independently wealthy or something, he's a fucking job. So Top automatically becomes both more desirable. We always want what other people have, right? How many times have you been like, I'm not going to have a beer tonight, and somebody on TV has a beer, you're like, fuck, I want a beer now, right? Some of that's by design as well. But how many times have you had something in your life where I don't really need that? You see somebody else, now you kind of, even if you don't do it, you kind of want a little bit more. That plays out with employees too. This person has and how long you been there? 5 years. Oh, fuck, good employee. Why are you looking? I want to grow. Oh, fuck, now I really, that's a great answer. I have reached the limits of what this job can teach me and do for me, and I'm looking for a change because I want to grow beyond where I'm at, and I do not see the opportunity where I am to grow beyond that. That's professional level answering. That is a professional level answer. That is a good employer that's looking to grow his company that he knows I need an employee in a growth mindset, because if my employees are not growing, my company will not grow. You're just went top stock value. So they're already willing to pay you more, but they also know they have to because you already have an income. You're not starving. You're not worried about making your mortgage payment. You're worried about improving your life. And if you improve your life, you'll improve their company. That's the way you frame it. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what passion does for you. Because if you're passionate about that new opportunity, you'll bring all that shit with you. One of the best responses I ever had in an interview myself, tell me why I should hire you. Because, sir, I want to do this job. And I could tell it hit. And the guy said, anything more? I said, that's what you really need to know. That's all you need to know. You know enough about what I can do. The fact that I want to do the job, not I want to get the job, that's all you need to know. And that was fucking the end of that shit. That was offer letter the next day, right? That's what passion is. But that's what I mean by you might need a 4x4 for the road that it will take you down. Then the next thing, have you ever heard of the many worlds theory? The many worlds theory, that's where like every decision point that you get to, go right or left, get up at 5 o'clock or get up at 6 o'clock, right? Write the article today, write the article tomorrow. Go to school, don't go to school. Take the overtime, don't take the overtime. Tell the kid's allowed to go to the party, tell the kid they're not. Literally everything. When you get up in the morning, make coffee first or go to the bathroom first. Put the water on a boil or go to the bathroom first. Like every decision, no matter how minor, has actually been made in both directions. And there's another variation of you that did make the, and there's for every person, like a kabillion forks in their life. And this is actually like a legitimate level, I guess we lost. I wonder if we can only stream for an hour on Instagram because we just lost Instagram at an hour. So the multiverse though. So I guess I can stream on Instagram for an hour. So fuck it, whatever. If you've studied this, this multiverse theory, and there's like episodes of Star Trek with it and shit, and like quantum physics says this is actually a possibility, if not actually a probability. I don't know. I find it a bit, I'm just going to say unlikely, and I am open to a lot of things in that realm. That one's a bit much for me. But I will also tell you, on a certain level, it is real. It is real at a personal and unidirectional meaning. In other words, whether that other decision was made or not, in some alternate fucking multi-universe bullshit, it wasn't made in yours, something else was. And at every point that you make a choice, you move forward, which means your learning is always in the present and the past, but your corrections are always in the future. You have made that choice to turn left instead of right, and then you got a wreck. You can't go back and go right instead of left, right? You can't change it because you went back 30 seconds. This is an important lesson because sometimes that choice is really bad and it results in something like going to prison, getting really sick, or dying, right? Or really hurting someone, killing someone because you made a bad choice to pull out of an intersection you shouldn't have. Like there's a serious nature to it, but there's also like the ongoing nature of like nothing really bad happened, but I am just not happy with where I'm living, right? I'm just not happy with where I am. I wish 5 years ago I had done this other thing. There's no point in this. There's no value in this other than now that I know that was a mistake, what do I do about it starting this second? That multi-fractional universe has occurred, but even if science says, you know, it's possible, if not probable, if it's not true at all, it still exists in that one branch that you're on. Or what they refer to in the Star Trek universe as a prime timeline. The one that you're supposed to be on is the one that you're on. Well, once you know that, it changes how you look at everything. And you realize that like, if my past decisions affect my present, but the correction is always in the future, well, I can't blame the boomers for my situation. I can't. Because it won't matter even if I'm right. The only thing that matters is from here forward. Or in the world of self-defense, we teach it, right? Everything is your responsibility. Everything is your responsibility. You're in a fucking shooting situation. Everything's not hitting the innocent, putting down the bad guy, keeping yourself alive, identifying yourself when law enforcement shows up. All the things you don't think, like all I should have to do is do what I can to help and that's it. No. Every fucking thing is your responsibility. Is there another threat? Is there more than one shooter, right? I'm using that because it's more familiar to this audience. but it's everything in life. You had a report due that you didn't get done for your boss. He's pissed. That's going to kind of cascade up. His boss is going to be pissed. Or he's going to fucking invent numbers and stick them in, and he's going to do his best, and that's going to cover his ass, but he's going to hold you accountable. But what can you do? Apology? I don't give a fuck you apologized in that situation. I care that it never fucking happens again. And the best thing you can do is, even though the point is over, turn it in late. Tell me it's never going to happen again, and tell me how you're going to make sure it never happens again. Tell me why it happened. Did I fail you? Did I fail you? The reason I didn't get it done is I really wasn't clear on what I was supposed to do. Now, if you've done it 10 times in the past, I'm not going to buy that. This is the first time, and I thought you were ready, and you weren't. And I gave you a shot, and you didn't feel comfortable saying, Jack, I can't get this done. I don't know how. Show me. Then I failed you. You didn't feel comfortable coming to me as your leader and telling me you needed help. That's me. That's on my problem. No matter which one it is, though, all your solutions are from the present forward. The back bifurcations have already occurred. I don't know why we don't teach that in school. Sounds like it's pretty interesting. And it sounds like it's pretty important to me. The next one. You notice we have all these young people angry and they're out protesting injustices and shit, but they don't actually do anything, right? Free Palestine, free Palestine. They couldn't tell you where Palestine is. They can't tell you the history of Palestine. And that's one example. Don't hone in on that one alone, you know? When's the last time you sent a check to an organization to help feed hungry people in a place that you're concerned about? Never? Oh, because you're poor? Well, you're in Colombia. You can't be that poor. So you won't even do like the most mundane fucking thing, $10 a month to like, you know, some kid that lives in a place you supposedly care about. Or you care about the homeless on the street, but you don't like, I don't know, go out once a month and pack up some shit, drive your freaking car your daddy bought you around, and hand out some cans of food. Right? Like, instead of like giving them money, which you know they're going to use on drugs or fucking booze, like feed these hungry people that you care about or whatever, because you don't. This is all a misdirection. It's back to, it's somebody else's fault, right? This is back to generational mismatch blame. It's the boomer's fault, whatever. Anything that makes you feel better in your misery, it's infinitely related. But what if, you know what really causes all this is conflict. Sometimes it's like kinetic warfare conflict, like recently in Gaza with Israel or with Ukraine and Russia or any of the kinetic conflicts you've heard of or seen in your life. But there's also a lot of like rich and poor conflict. You ever think about that? There's a lot of class warfare, all this conflict. You know the solution to conflict is? Because this is the point. The solution to conflict is designed abundance. There is never conflict over things that are dramatically abundant and available. Think of something like homelessness, right? Or people that live in just shithole fucking housing. Because that's all I can afford, right? And I think anybody can do better, but I do have sympathy for the person who's born into a housing project in, you know, the South Chicago or South Central LA or something like that. And their parents were born into it. Their grandparents were born into it and their great grandparents were born into it. Very difficult for that person to get out of there. And even when they try, the hurdle seems so high to improve their situation just a little bit, just where their boy that lives a little bit better lives just a few blocks away, like outside of the projects, you know, itself, just a little bit better. Like that hurdle seems unleapable. Do you know what we could do about that? The solution would be design in the concept of our society to abundant, affordable, resilient housing. We've absolutely never done this. We build houses to last 15 to 25 years, and they're very expensive. The way we design a suburb is absolutely preposterous. The way we design a city is even worse. There are so many technologies that we could use to rapidly build housing and not give it away. Sell it. You buy it, you own it, it becomes your responsibility, but we could do it so much better. Have you ever thought about like combining some of the technologies we have right now? Like, what if you combine 3D printing and straw bale houses? So you had the rigidity and rapid deployability of a 3D printed house, but you printed it with the space so that it went around the compacted bales that were already there. How fast can we build a shell of a house that way that would last 100,000 fucking years and require very little cost of energy inputs? Because it has the ability to actually insulate and to move heat or cold in and out and act as a thermal battery. That's just one. And if you think that that's oversimplifying, that designed abundance is how you eliminate conflict. Think about this. There was a time in history that men took out swords and bows and knives and clubs and shields and slaughtered other men in wars at the behest of the state in conflict over the control of something like the trade of pepper. The trade of black pepper, the original Silk Road. There were massive conflicts over anything that was highly valued that only existed in one place or existed in limited places and had to be moved. People killed each other over coffee. People killed each other over rubber, like the actual sap that comes out of the rubber tree. People killed each other over it. People killed each other over things today that we would never even lift a finger to fight for. Why? Point-click buy on Amazon shows up at your house. Anybody here have a hard time getting their hands on salt or pepper or spices or rubber? Cheap and widely available. We do not fight over it. So look at every place there's conflict. Determine the shortage that creates the conflict. Okay? Design abundance of the thing that's in shortage, and the conflict goes away. Do you see how freaking simple that is? Right? And you say, well, if there's a shortage of oil, we can't just make more oil. We're not fighting over oil. We're fighting over energy. We need to design abundance of energy or minimize the need for energy without giving up the reason we want the energy in the first place. If it costs less to heat a house, we need less fuel to heat a house. There's less conflict for the fuel. The fuel becomes more abundant. The conflict goes away. Water, same. Every brand new building should be designed to harvest water because it fucking falls out of the sky in two ways. For use by the building, it's actually three ways. For use by the building itself, and when that becomes in surplus, for use by the community as a whole. And third, so that it properly infiltrates into the ground that which is in surplus, and there's more than enough to do that in even very arid climates. Now, the most arid, like Saudi Arabia, where it's 2 inches, you've got to do another solution to that. But 15 inches of rain a year in a place with that much building and concrete as a city has, we have flooding. We have problems all the time. We can end a lot of these conflicts, both internal and external, both societal and kinetic warfare can all be ended. That should be the goal. In every place there's a problem, design abundance to the thing that causes the conflict. Wherever there's a deficiency, fix the problem. Don't throw money at it. Look at healthcare. Healthcare is a great example, right? The United States has the poorest health in the developed world measured by life expectancy. This is not an opinion. This is not an opinion. You look at when people die, how old are they when they die? The United States versus, let's say, Canada, France, Spain, Italy, Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, etc., we die younger and we spend more money on healthcare. So how would spending more money on it, how would be giving more health insurance out, how would be subsidizing health insurance more, how would that actually improve our health if we're already spending more and getting less results? You know what happens when you spend more on a failing system? You magnify the failure. You magnify the failure. So the more you pour on it, the worse it'll actually get. Isn't that an interesting lesson in life? So what we should be doing is we should be seeking to create an abundance of health, not healthcare, health. That's the first point. Then we look at care. Then we look at insurance. That would be the order of progression. We look at creating health. Then we look at the cost of care and the quality of care. Then we look at insurance for what cannot be afforded. What do your masters and overlords do? They focus on one thing, insurance, the least effectual. The least effectual. Well, I don't have to worry about that because I'll just get surgery one day and my insurance will pay for it. I've heard people actually fucking say that stupid shit. But if we focus first on, let's create abundance of health. Let's start teaching kids from an early age how to be healthy. What to eat, what not to eat. Let's get this shit out of their face. Like if you want to go eat garbage, eventually fine, but let's not have it in their face when they're young and they become so easily addicted to it. Let's make being healthy a virtue again. You don't have to shame the fat to make people want to be thin and healthy. You hold that up as the example of what achievement looks like. And you tell the kid, like, just because, you know, Roscoe is a starter on the football team and a quarterback, you don't have to be him. But you should be more like him than the fat kid that we used to have in the 80s. We had a fat kid in school. Now we have the skinny kids, a few of them. We don't have the health that we used to have. This is immediately evident. We have freaking kidney dialysis clinics popping up like fucking Subway restaurants in every metropolitan area. They're everywhere. Start paying attention. If you live in like a major metropolitan area, especially once you get off the highway and you're driving through like the main roads where they have shops and stuff like that, start looking. Or get on Google Maps and put in kidney dialysis center in Google Maps. And if you don't live in a bigger city, pick one. Dallas, Fort Worth, Jacksonville, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia. Just stick it in. Kidney dialysis and look how many pop up. And you go, holy shit. How will health insurance fix that? It won't. We have to create abundance because health is a conflict. That's why they use it and leverage it in politics to get elected. I'm angry that my insurance is so expensive. You should be angry that no one gives a fuck that you're sick. And then you should take it on as that's my responsibility and see to your health. It's amazing what happens. Why do you think these 10 things are not taught in our education system? Last one. You ever hear the term never quit? Never quit. A quitter never wins and a winner never quits. It's so fucking on its face bullshit unless you add another part to it. Unless you add another part to it. Never quit. So if I'm a drinker, I should never quit. If I'm a smoker, I should never quit. If I'm engaged in some self-destructive behavior like a drug addict, never quit. Okay, so that's already stupid, right? But Jack, that's the extreme. I choose a major in school. It turns out I fucking hate it. I'm 2 years in. I'm not like 3 weeks. I'm not like one semester from graduation. And I have plenty of time to just shift my major. I shouldn't quit. I mean, Joel Riles brought this up and he said, like, he saw people that, like, in their last semester redid their major and they had to go back. Like, it was so fucking, like, just get your degree at that point. But if you're a year in and you're like, I don't want to do this engineering shit, you should never quit because a winner never quits. You're running a business and you realize you're in over your head and you hate the thing you thought you were going to love. You shouldn't quit and do something else. See how fucking stupid that is? So how do you fix that? Never quit, but always shift. Whether shifting is toward getting toward the same goal or shifting to a new one. Never quit is not about the individual fucking thing. I had a family member. His kid was a pretty gifted athlete. He was also a very gifted academic. So much so that he ended up when he went to college with a choice of an academic versus a sports scholarship. And he was very gifted in baseball and football. And he was kind of a unique position in football. He's a long snapper and very good at it. And that's actually a very specialized skill. But as he got closer and closer to graduating high school, so his junior year, he ends his junior year and he tells his dad, I'm going to quit one of my two sports. Because it's taking too much from me. It's taking too much of my time and energy. And I don't really enjoy one as much as the other. The one he wanted to quit was actually football. He got a lot more out of baseball. And his dad's like, the team's counting on you, whatever. And I told him, bro, you do what you think is right. Because you're under no obligation to continue doing something you don't really want to do that's not advancing your goals forward in life. you're not good enough that you're going to get a scholarship as a long snapper in football. You might get one in baseball. You like baseball and your fucking grades are stellar. So you're always going to have the academic angle. He took his Uncle Jack's advice. Then he went to school and he chose to go the academic route because he was already, his kid's smart. He was already thinking ahead. And eventually he quit playing ball. If he'd gone on the sports scholarship, they own you in college. They fucking own your ass. So he quit certain pieces at certain stages. Once they had done enough for him, you know, it was great to have those extracurricular activities when he interviewed to go to college. When they said, why did you quit football? Because academics are important to me too. Baseball is the sport that I excelled at and I really loved. I wanted to keep playing an extra sport for my team and for my school, but I didn't want to devalue my academics. Straight in the fucking door he went. See that? That's what I mean by never quit, but always shift. Quitting is not about taking like this one thing I'm doing and doing it forever or until it's finished. It's about never stop moving forward. That's what I mean when I say never quit. Never quit fucking living. Never quit striving for more. Never quit improving your life. Never quit improving your fucking net worth, both in monetary value and human value. Never fucking quit. But shift. If you're doing something that makes you fucking miserable, and it will only ever make you miserable, and it will never reach a point where the misery will be worth the sacrifice, fucking quit that shit. But shift. Don't quit abruptly, right? Like what my family member did, he did not quit in the middle of a season because then they are counting on you. No, he walked up to that coach and said, I really appreciate the opportunity of playing here. I really love what it's done for me. I'm glad I contributed to the team, but I'm going to focus on my grades and my other sport in my last year of school because it's very important to me. I get a great college, put his fucking back straight, looked at coach and I shook his hand, and that coach said, you know what? Sorry you're leaving. We really value you, but I appreciate that you came and told me right away. So that coach could start planning for that next season, knowing that that kid wasn't moving up as a senior in varsity. That's quitting properly. That's shifting. That's shifting your goals. Now, sometimes you have to shift very fast, right? Like, we got to move quickly. But if you have the time to on the way out the door to do everybody right, you should always do that. Don't burn bridges. Don't burn bridges. You never know when you'll depend on that person that you burned a bridge with again. You never know. Unless that person is the kind of like, this is a sleazy motherfucker that I don't ever want my name associated with now that I know who that's different. But if there is a good relationship or even a decent relationship, don't burn that shit. You just don't know when you're going to need it again. So with that, let's go ahead and look at some comments and questions that came in from the audience, and then we'll wrap up. Top Cone says, poverty mindset results in unwilling to act. Too many refuse to move, pointing how hard it is as a reason to not take action. See, Top, for those that don't know, Top, he's a first sergeant. I don't know if he's still a first sergeant or he might be a sergeant major for all I know at this point. But Top, that's what they call you when you're first sergeant in a unit. So he's military. I'm imagining, just looking at the dude, you're either Army or Marine Corps, and I'm thinking Army. I don't know if they call – I don't think they have first sergeants in the Marine Corps. They probably call them whatever the fuck they call them there. But in the Army, Top is a first sergeant. And one thing you learn in the Army – if you quit moving, you die. Taking cover is fine, but you can't stop. You have to make a decision. You have to make a choice. You have to know why you're making it, and you have to keep moving, or you're going to get killed. Well, in life, there's more than one way to get killed. There's killed dead in a box, six people carry, you put you in a hole, put a stone next to your head, and they go on with their life, okay? That's a thing. That exists. But there's also other ways to die inside in life. And when you stop moving, that's where you die. When you quit, that's where you die. That's why I say always quit, never shift. That's funny that was like the first comment made, but it fits perfectly with the last point that I got to. Thanks, Top. And thank you for your service, sir. Especially kind of on the day after Memorial or Veterans Day. Second Life Farm comment, people need to learn how to set goals There are too many people that think that goals and dreams are synonyms. They're not. Goals are a dream with a strategy and tactic to achieve it. I love that. I might steal that shit, dude. Sorry. Yeah, a goal is something that you have set. And if you truly set a goal, you've reverse engineered it. To achieve X, I will first have to achieve A, B, C, D, E, F, and however many fucking things there are. And then a reasonable, like, here's the first step, and a reasonable time frame to achieve that sub-goal is a month. And in a month, if it didn't get done, it didn't get fucking done. And otherwise, it stays a dream. If it didn't get done, then you have to assess, did I really give it hell? Did I really push for all I was worth to achieve that? Or, and it was just as I was learning, I thought that I could do that in a month, and I'm close, but I need two more weeks. Then you might adjust the entire timeline. Never quit, always shift. All right? Or, yeah, I didn't give it all. There was a lot more I could have done to get to that point. It's on me. And then you have to determine, is it because I was lazy? Is it because I didn't take it seriously? Or is it because along the way I figured out I don't really want that anymore? That's not really, like, I thought I wanted that. Now I shift. Then come up with something you do want. Because there is nothing wrong with pursuing something just far enough to go, either I don't really want it, or now that I realize the sacrifice, I am consciously saying I am not willing to make that sacrifice for that thing. Great. Because you can only do so many things at once. So find the place where the passion lies. Because when you find that, like I said, you might need a 4x4 to get down the road. But the road becomes pretty fucking clear once you do that. Second light farm again. You have to reframe your mental frame to how can I do this instead of why can't I? Asking how will always open you up to finding a solution. Boy, that sounds familiar. That sounds like Jack's Law of Life number 4 or something like that. I'm just saying, but it's not mine, right? I don't own my laws of life. That he may have gotten that from me. He may have gotten that from somewhere totally different. It's amazing what happens to the mental fucking computer in your head. Because that's what your 3-pound fatty brain is. It's a fucking computer. And it only works hard when it's adequately challenged to do so. It's an AI, right? It's an intelligent computer. It's not an AI. It's a true intelligent computer, right? It's intelligent intelligence. And it gets bored really easy. How many times in your life have you been bored because your brain's not challenged in some way, right? Or the challenge is something you don't give a fuck about. So you need a worthy challenge that you care about, and that fucker will kick in. And when you say something like, how can I do X or how can I have Y? If you just ask that question a few times a week of yourself, and I'm not talking about like a positive affirmation, like I am great, I'm wonderful, and everybody likes me, right? That bullshit. Like what I'm saying is like, how can I grow my business by 5X? How can I own a remote property? How can I become good at flipping real estate or become a landlord? How can I advance my career? How can I make more money? Whatever it is you want. How can I set up my life so I can have more leisure in my preferred leisure activity? Be specific, fishing, hunting, whatever, playing baseball, whatever it is, right? How can I do this? Your computer fires off a background process. We have no idea how powerful that computer is. We really don't. And so that's why you have dreams, because of background processes. You have this weird fucking dream, and then you think about it, you realize what it symbolizes. You're like, fuck, I hadn't thought about that in a week. Yeah, you did. You just didn't know you were. You weren't conscious of it. That subconscious processing is going on. And every time you ask the question again, you're upping the queue. You're upping the queue. You're saying, you're putting a higher priority on it. It's like you have a team and they're working and you gave them 3 projects. Which one are they going to work hardest on? The one I tell them is most important. Maybe if you tell them once, they're not going to. Not if they're 3 long-term projects. They're going to take 90 days to get all 3 of them done. They're going to work on the one that interests them the most. If you walk in that office every day and say, what is the status of Project A? And you do it the next day, and they start fucking the next day, this motherfucker is going to come in here, and he's going to be like, what is the status of Project A? Clearly, he's judging us on, they're going to fucking put that as priority. And when they reach a point where they can't do any more Project A today, if they're not going to get fired by me, they're going to work on B and C. And then eventually they get Project A done, and you're going to come back and go, what's that? It's done, boss. Great. Good job. What is the project? What is the, where are we at on Project C? Okay. It's balls to the wall on Project C, and Project B is the secondary priority. And when they say that's done, they're going to work on Project B. And you tell me I have to do anything else as an owner, manager, operator, whatever. Except if I ask about one thing more than the other, that's what you're going to focus on. Your brain works the same fucking way. You have a team in your head. You have multiple personality order, not disorder. Your brain is dynamic. It can go into different roles. That's why you can act. That's why you can pretend that you're scared. Maybe not as convincing as a professional, but you can do it. You can pretend to be excited. I can pretend I am being dynamic as a speaker, even when I'm saying bullshit, right? Like, it's much easier when I'm saying something that really matters. I can pretend I'm being deep and emotional as a speaker, even when I'm saying bullshit. You see how it works? You can do that because we can switch in and out of personas, and we can switch in and out of perspectives. We can switch from our logic to emotional side of our mindset. We have all these teams inside of us working to our goals, but it's up to us to direct them. Because otherwise it's like, la, 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 I'll play video games. Right? And if video games aren't for you, some other fuck off mechanism you have, then if you're not constantly reprioritizing the mindset, like, oh, I guess that what we're supposed to focus on is TikTok videos because that's what we're constantly seeing, right? But even if you're doing that, if you're going, brain, how can I get onto a homestead and out of an apartment? And you're asking yourself that question three times a day, even when you're fucking doom scrolling TikTok, your brain's going, hey, wait a minute. This one right here, this one. Let me work with that a while. And when your brain starts to drift, but you come back in the next day, you ask yourself out loud, if necessary, how can I get onto a homestead piece of property and out of my apartment? It becomes this priority. Like, fuck, the boss is coming. Everybody look busy. The boss is coming. And work on this shit because we need an answer. You're requiring your brain to find an answer, and it fucking will. It'll find many answers. That's how this manifestation shit works. You know, where like people are like, but, you know, I manifested this. They manifested it, but not in some fucking, you know, new age bullshit way where like, hey, I just believed that I would find a parking spot and there was a parking spot. And I have people say, fuck, I do that all the time. You know what happened? Because you attuned yourself to it, something happened like this. And this might not be the exact thing, but this is a scenario that can occur. Somebody was walking out of that Home Depot in that giant parking lot with all the parking places. And there was something about their gait, their directionality, and their mindset and the way they were moving to even have a peripheral of your vision. Something in you said, make a right turn and go back down this aisle. And as you were coming up, they were backing out and you went in. You don't even know you saw them. That's how fucking opportunity switches on. When you start saying, how can I? You see shit you would have missed, right? Right? Goals make the inevitable educational? Yeah. It comes back around like that. Now, Al didn't say anything, but he sent me $9.99. Thank you, Al. I appreciate that value for value exchange. Second Light says, what you do matters, and a $2 super chat. Thank you for that, sir. I appreciate it. The Chemo Cop says, what do you see as the most important idea discussed so far to pass down to your sons? All of them, but never quit, always shift. Because if you take that mindset, you're going to discover the rest. If you teach a young person, when I say not to quit, I don't mean the individual thing. I mean your progression in life, your drive forward, your improvement from an economic standpoint, and from a standpoint as a human being, spiritually and physically, never quit. Never quit advancing yourself forward. But if something is not working, change it so that you can get to where you want to be, then you're going to self-educate. You're going to accept the fact that it's your responsibility. You're going to realize that there's opportunities everywhere. You're going to do all the other things, I would say. And maybe that's subconsciously why I put it last, because I didn't put it last for that reason. Great question, man. When a question makes me go, huh, and I don't default to, it depends. That's a good fucking question. Firebird Optics, $3,001, $20 super chat. Thank you, sir. Guaranteed anyone that has the words, it's not my fault in their vocabulary and says it a lot is not improving. If you're always doing everything right, then there is no impetus for bettering yourself. And my thing is, if you think you're always doing everything right, why are you asking me how to fix your problem? And why don't you have what you want? There is this weird fucking belief we've gotten to that we actually think individually, I mean, and as a society, that a person can do everything right and yet not succeed. Like you can be doing all the things correctly and applying effort at all, you know, and have all of it right and then be a failure. I'm going to tell you that's not the case. And I know sometimes it doesn't feel that way because you're like, but Jack, I'm working my fucking ass off. I'm working till I'm near dead every day. But if you're a fly and your goal is to get out of the house and you end up in a window and you sit there just fucking, I'm going to keep trying to get through this fucking window and I want to get outside. I don't even have to kill you. We've all seen it, right? That fly's in the window and you're like, I don't feel like fucking killing that fucking fly. Fuck him. As long as he doesn't bother me, I'll leave him there. And you come back the next day and he's freaking legs up on the windowsill. He tried himself to death. Like, flies don't live that long in general, but that fly probably shortened his life by 50% by just pounding that window. So if you're doing everything right, you're going to have significant success in life. And even people with significant success, we're not doing everything right. Why do you think fucking Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest basketball player that ever lived, even when he was at his peak of performance, had a coach? What do you think Troy Aikman, who had 3 fucking Super Bowls in 4 fucking years at the peak of his performance, had a coach? And I don't mean the one the team gave him. I mean his personal coach. Why do you think the greatest athletes and some of the greatest business people in the world have coaches and counselors? Because they know I'll never be perfect. And while it's true that perfect is the enemy of the good, right? The lack of willingness to try to improve is a death sentence for a business. It's a death sentence for a career. If I have you working for me and you're really good, but you are not trying to be better than you are right now, no matter how big my organization is, you're gonna hit a ceiling. And it's not a real ceiling. It's a ceiling of your own making. I'm going to look at you and I'm going to go, no. And the reason no is this next position, like I might even promote you twice after I feel that way. But it, like, okay, I see where he's gotten to and he's capable of being here. I'll promote you to here. Like if the space is there and I don't have somebody else available to stick there, but when I got to promote somebody to here, I'll go outside the fucking company and hire somebody in above you. Usually when that happens, what it means is that your company, your employer, your boss has decided you're not ready yet. No one else in the organization. Doesn't mean that you know no one ever will be. But you are not showing enough growth potential to roll the dice on moving you up. Or the organization, like the other thing is the organization itself is failing. This is a lot of times when I was hired into places or brought in as a partner. We need somebody to change it. We need somebody to change. We are failing, not they are failing to grow. We are failing to grow. And we need somebody with fresh eyes to take an analysis and say, this is what we need to do differently. That, yeah, I was going to say that, Top. You get promoted to your highest level of incompetence. That's in a poorly run organization. that organization is going to itself plateau. Because what happens is, since nobody's growing, this is what I said, you cannot grow a company unless your people grow as individuals. So when you have all your management levels slightly above their confidence level and they're not still looking to grow, how can your organization grow? How can it improve? How can it become better? I mean, your sales might even still go up for a while, but your organization won't really grow. Your operational capacity will not really grow. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and tell you guys about one of the ways you can help support this show. Of course, you know that. Do your online shopping at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. This is where I review products that I actually own and use. And I thought about this, and we are coming up in just a couple of weeks on Thanksgiving. So what I have for you guys today is a 22-quart roaster oven by Aroma. I actually own this exact – it's the exact same piece of equipment made by Oster, but Oster doesn't make it anymore. Aroma makes it now. I've looked at the specs. This is the same thing. I own three of these. And we use them for workshops. We use them for a bunch of stuff. I have taken one of these and smoked six pork shoulders and then a Texas cheat, wrapped all six of them, put them three vertically and two of them, set it on a low temp, go to bed, wake up, tender as shit you ever ate in your life. They're basically a portable oven, is the way to think about it. They run from very low temps up to like 450 degrees. And with Thanksgiving coming up, you know what does great in these? Turkey, or a parted out turkey, by the way, is another way to go with this. And that does something really important for many of you. It gives you your oven back. In general, we have all these sides that we put out for the family with Thanksgiving. If we can take that turkey and we can take it out of the oven so it's not taking the whole damn oven up, now we can make our biscuits or our bread, and we can bake our stuffing and get it nice and crispy on top, or our gratin potato, whatever it is you make. I like to do roasted potatoes for Thanksgiving. That needs an oven. It needs a high temperature oven, way too high to be in there with the turkey to get it the way that I want it. It just gives you that back. And then you can set it super low, and you can finish the turkey slowly. You could turn it off and throw a blanket over the damn thing once it's off and hold temp in there for a long-ass time before you pull that turkey out or pull out the individual parts and cut it up for your family. It just gives you things back. Plus, anytime you're making large amounts of food, they're just one of the most fantastic tools you can use. But here's the best thing. In the write-up that I have on this, there's a link at the bottom in the PS. They make plastic, high-temp grade, food-safe plastic liners for these things. They have like an insert liner that's got the ceramic shit on it and all, non-stick or whatever. When a turkey or something else cooks in there for a long time, it gets sticky, it's hard to clean up, whatever. You put the liner in. When you're done cooking, you pull the liner out, you tie it up, and you throw it in the fucking garbage. That's your cleanup. How cool is that? Check these things out. Again, we've used them at many workshops. I give you quite a few different applications for them in the write-up today. And again, you'll be helping the show out if you do your online shopping started at tspaz.com. If you like this show today, then if you haven't yet, you need to pick up a copy of my book, Laws of Life by Jack Spirico. You can find that on Amazon or on my website or at jackslaws.com. And I have a bit of an announcement too about the AI course. Tom and I have looked at how we can run the most amount of rounds next year. We are not going to start one now, because it will run through Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's. That seems like a bad idea. We are going to put the course on sale the week of Christmas, not during Christmas, the week thereof. So that, let me see here. Yeah, that's true. That's right. I'm not lying to you. Christmas will fall on a Thursday, the 25th. The 22nd will be when we put the course on sale. You go to jackslaws.com to sign up for the pre-registration list. There's already about 800 people on it. Okay? So you're going to be ready. I'm going to talk to Tom about some ways we can maybe make it a little bit easier on people when we send that email, because order of email determines, you know, when the email gets delivered. Maybe we'll have like a countdown page, and 15 minutes before we'll send out an email that says, here's where it is. But it will only be pre-registered people that can get in. And then the course itself shall begin on January, because we always do that a week later. It will begin on January the 5th. So there'll be like a 2-week delay between sign up and get going. The reason we do that is when you sign up, you go on a drip email and it gives you over about 5 to 7 days, all the things you need to do to be ready. So we need some delay in there, and that just works out better. And that will get it going as soon as possible. It will also be the case that, you know, with January the 1st landing on a Thursday, I won't be here Friday. That will be about as early as we'll be able to even do it, because I shut down between Christmas and New Year's, and so do a lot of people. But on the 5th, New Year's resolution, baby. Let's build that business. Let's 10X that bitch. And if we don't have a business yet, let's design a plan for that business with this course. The only thing close to a negative review we've gotten about this course so far is this is not a course about just how to use ChatGPT. It's about building a business or expanding a business, marketing and operating a business. So if you don't have an interest in building a business, don't take it. Bro, we told you that when you signed up. We told that before you signed up. That's what this course is. Absolutely. I find that to be a compliment. Anyway, guys, take care. It is a Wednesday. I didn't have an interview today. I will catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show. Should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.